During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout-out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. So this is one of the few times this season where I could come on this show and talk about the positives of what's been going on with the Kansas City Royals. They've won three of their last four. They recently won a series in Oakland. And last night, they won their fourth game of the road trip. And going into that series with the Anaheim Angels, they were 5-14 in their last 19 games against the LA Angels. But they win last night behind a great start by Chris Bubich, went six innings, struck out seven, allowed only two earned runs, and the Royals won 6-2. Moved to 24-42 on the season. And when you look around the league, I don't know how much you care about this. I don't know how much you Royals fans care about. I mean, okay, say you Royals fans. As Royals fans, we may care about this. They're inching closer and closer now to maybe the middle of the pack. There's a lot of teams now slipping closer and closer to the Royals record. So they, for not long, had the worst record in baseball, but now they're inching closer, maybe getting into that bottom tier level, but not bottoming out. And I would love, believe me, I would love to sit here for 15 to 20 minutes and go over the positives of what happened last night. But after we were off air yesterday, Dayton Moore had, I want to say, an interviewing session, because it was not a, I guess, a scheduled press conference. He was at one of his youth camps for, I believe, the Jewish Community Center. There, he had a baseball camp there, and a lot of media was there, and they had a chance to talk to Dayton Moore. And, of course, the question came up about Cal Eldred, the job Cal Eldred has been doing. Most fans at this point are questioning how the hell he's even still here. The Royals' pitching has been abysmal, and the numbers don't lie. Like, you look around the league, pitching numbers, the Royals are near the bottom in nearly every category. So we all wondered, especially after the Royals fired Terry Bradshaw and brought in Alex Zumwalt and Mike Tosar, it was, okay, when's the time up on Cal Eldred? When can we finally sever the tie between the Royals organization and Cal Eldred? And we thought, in all honesty, Cal Eldred would have been the first to go, not Terry Bradshaw. But in the end, it was Terry Bradshaw going first. He was the first one to go in this catastrophic season to this point. But Dayton Moore doubled down that not only is Cal Eldred's job safe, he believes Cal Eldred is doing a tremendous job. Here's the quote. This is on Twitter from Aaron Ladd, at Aaron Ladd Zero, KSHB 41 sports anchor. Dayton Moore said this about Cal Eldred: Cal's doing an amazing job, and I appreciate the question. Questions like that need to be asked. Cal's doing a tremendous job as far as his attitude is concerned. We are seeing some growth. For those of you that are unaware, the Royals are 28th in ERA and fielder independent pitching. They are 29th in Ks per nine, and they are dead last in the league in walks per nine. Yet, we hear these words from Dayton Moore, president of baseball operations and has a stranglehold on this organization, the only man that is a higher rank than Dayton Moore, is John Sherman. And we've really yet to see too much from John Sherman since he's taken ownership over the ball club. But quotes like this is what can chill you to your core if you're a Royals fan. Now, as I mentioned about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I'm done raising my voice about the Royals because I don't feel there's a need to be angry, especially when it's the same stuff you're getting angry about. I would love to scream and yell this morning about this comment from Dayton Moore, but it's more chilling to me. It's far more chilling. Because the Royals, though they have a young pitching staff, they have not made tremendous strides. We have not seen a ton of growth with these guys. Have they had good starts? Of course they have. Brady Singer's looked good from time to time. Chris Bubich was strong last night. He's looked good since coming out from Omaha. You know, John Heasley's turned it around. He's looked pretty good. Daniel Lynch just struck out 10 his last outing. But here's what you can't do as a GM or a president of baseball operations. You can't fall in love with stretches. Because at the end of the day, the Royals are 24-42. And I think from time to time, not only the front office, but Royals fans have fallen into that trap. We've all bought in to the red-hot Royals in September in 2018 and 19. We looked at that ball club and said, that's exactly what they needed going into the offseason. The rebuild is right on time. But you can't be stuck to growth in year 5 of a rebuild. No, you have to see significant strides. And we can't say that with confidence. As we mentioned, tremendous strides is not leading the league in walks per nine. And maybe you're a team that walks a lot but strikes out a lot. That's not true either. The Royals are second to last in strikeouts per nine. They are third to last in ERA and fielder independent pitching. No, the Royals pitching staff has been terrible. But from time to time, the young guys have proven they have talent. And I will give the nod more to the pitchers than I will to Cal Eldred. We've shown you the numbers after a Cal Eldred mound visit. We've also showed you every single possible number on this pitching staff. It ain't good. So why is it that we can feel comfortable with firing Terry Bradshaw but not Cal Eldred? Is it because the hitters have more experience in the lineup than the rotation does? Well, okay, if that's your reason, just come out and say it. But the reason it's chilling and the reason the Royals fan base should be alarmed by this is that at 24-42, with one of the worst pitching staffs in baseball, the front office believes they're in a good spot in year 5 of a rebuild. And that's alarming because when words like that come out of your president of baseball operations mouth, not much change is going to happen. At this point, I've gone from Cal Eldred will be fired by August to he may be the pitching coach next season. Because here's the reality. John Sherman has the only power in this organization to clean house. Not saying they should clean house. I think it's certainly something to look into, an option you could have. But there's a chance that John Sherman believes in Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo in year 5 of this rebuild. There's a chance he believes Cal Eldred is doing a bang-up job. And that's concerning. Because you will not have these young pitchers forever. And you want to capitalize on their third and fourth year in the league. Brady Singer and Chris Bubich have been in the big leagues since 2020. This is year 3 for them. And you'd be lying if you said, I've seen tremendous strides from them. I've seen good things from both of them. But I've also seen some regression. I saw regression last year. I've seen regression this year. And I'm not going to put that on their shoulders. I'm going to put that on the pitching coach. Because it's the pitching coach's job to make sure those strides happen. Yes, at the end of the day, the pitchers have to come out and throw the pitches. It's about knowing what pitches to throw, when to attack the hitter, when to stay away from the hitter, where to locate, getting ahead in the count. The Royals don't get ahead in the count. And in fact, we've seen a lot of veterans regress at the tail end of their careers in Kansas City. We've seen guys leave Kansas City and go and succeed elsewhere. Jacob Junis and Jorge Lopez come to mind. It's getting away from the Royals organization that is allowing other pitchers to succeed. And good for them. They're making a career of themselves where they couldn't really in Kansas City. But it's alarming. It's alarming that we can sit here and be okay, be content with still having one of the worst records in baseball. Believe me, I want to feel good about the good stretch the Royals have had of play recently. And they're doing it on a road trip that they almost never play well in, the West Coast road trip. They took one from San Francisco, two from Oakland, and now are one win away from taking the series against the Angels, who, as I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, they're 5-14 against in the last couple of years. I don't know how Dayton Moore can continue to feed this to the fan base that knows he's blatantly lying. Either he's lying, or he's trying to convince himself that he's not lying. We have brought up that type of scenario. Not let's separate the two situations, but let's bring up the similarities between trying to convince yourself that you're not lying. We talked about the Deshaun Watson case last week, and Marco brought up a great point that's saying, well, Deshaun Watson is believable because in his mind, he may believe he's done nothing wrong. And there may be some people out there that go, man, Dayton Moore is believable because in his mind, he may believe that the Royals are on the right path. Now, I want to make a hard line here, and so I'm not comparing both situations. I'm saying the simple reality of some people try to lie to themselves and construe in their minds that they're not lying, that they are telling the truth, and they believe in themselves, and they believe in this process, but it's just not going to land with those that are listening to them. It's going to fall on deaf ears. And the Royals can't continue to go like this. They just can't. Cal Eldred cannot be in a Royals uniform after this offseason. Now, there is a chance. There is a slight chance. I'm giving it maybe less than a 5% chance that Dayton Moore is pumping up his pitching coach to eventually let him go later this season. I'm not buying into that because Dayton Moore's never done that. Dayton Moore wants to keep his coaching staff intact as long as he can. But there comes a time when tough decisions need to be made. I get that Dayton Moore is a phenomenal human being. He has done a lot for the community. He's done a lot for minor league baseball. He's done a lot for baseball in that matter. Same thing with a lot of guys in this organization. But at the end of the day, what the fan base wants, including all the great charity events and treating your players with respect, it's also wins. Because at the end of the day, it's a business, and wins result in more money. Wins result in interest. And the Royals don't win enough to generate that type of interest. And no, Cal Eldred is not the, by and away, the number one problem that is hurting the Royals. There's a lot of development flaws within this organization. There's coaching flaws. And there's front office flaws. It goes across the board. Because most teams would tell you, if they are 24-42, 66 games in the year five of rebuild, somebody's head's got to roll. Now, Terry Bradshaw's head did roll. That was early on. But that wasn't a complete fix. As we've seen, the Royals haven't won an ample amount of games since firing Terry Bradshaw. The offense has gotten better, and I'll give credit where credit's due. Alex Zumwalt and Mike Tosar have done a lot with what they're given. But there has to be different philosophies in this organization. There has to be somebody out there thinking, I can fix this. We've heard scouts look at the Royals organization and say, there's a disconnect. You know, if we had some of their players, we know how we could turn them around and make them star pitchers at this level. I mean, they could do it with Jacob Junis. They could do it with Jorge Lopez. Who knows what they could do with Brady Singer, Chris Bubich, and Daniel Lynch. And the clock is ticking on those guys. The Royals won't be able to keep them forever. They'll have to pick and choose who they want. Also keep in mind, it's the same front office that has struggled to draft well. They've missed on a lot of key guys, and maybe it's not missing on key guys. Maybe it's they draft the right guys, they can't develop them properly. Like, you look around the league right now, there are guys from that 2018 draft class that are thriving at the big league level because they're in the right organization, they're with the right fit, they're with the right pitching coach. I was super high on Brady Singer, Jackson Cora, Daniel Lynch, and Chris Bubich when they were drafted in 2018. I thought, man, college pitchers, give them a year or two, they're in the big league level, and they'll have an opportunity to shine early on. And they have fared well. They've held their own at the big league level, but it's about taking that next step. You can't use first-round draft picks and expect them to be number fours and number fives in a rotation. No, one of them has to be an ace. And I'm not sure that can happen as long as Cal Eldridge is here as the pitching coach. I mean, the Royals used their, what was it, their fourth overall pick on Asa Lacy. He can't stay healthy. Other guys in that draft have already broken into the big league level, or they're on the doorstep at the big league level. No, you stay in this division. And I don't want to knock him too much because he was great last night, but the Royals took Chris Bubich over Tarik Skubal, who the Tigers took, and Skubal's been fantastic. It's moves like that that have happened year in and year out with this organization. And I do want to give credit to Dayton Moore to trying to take pressure off the pitching staff, off the pitching coach, off this coaching staff. But the only thing he's doing is turning that red dot, that bullseye from Cal Eldred to himself. And he's probably fine with that. He wants to take all the heat from struggles with the Royals. I just don't know how you can look at comments like that and guarantee somebody's job next season. I don't know how you can. The Royals pitching staff hasn't been good. We have not seen enough growth where Cal Eldred should be the pitching coach next season, let alone the rest of the season. But the fact of the matter is, the one who controls that is Dayton Moore. If he wanted to, he could keep Cal Eldred in Kansas City for the next 4 or 5 years. Not saying it'll happen, but he has that power. The only person who can prevent that from happening is John Sherman. And we've yet to see much from him. We've yet to see him, I guess, follow through on some of the words that he had mentioned when he took over the Royals. You know, wanting to spend money, building a competitive team. The Royals haven't been competitive. They won 74 games last year. They likely won't win more than 70 this year. These are the continuous flaws the Royals have. It's being all right with complacency, or being complacent with sucking, for lack of a better term. Now, they've played better of late, but can we forgive them for the start they had? I mean, no matter how well the Royals play for the next couple of months, they can't erase what happened in April, in May, in June. They can't erase that, because they put themselves in such a hole that winning in July, winning in August, it's not going to matter too much other than just feeling good about walking into work the next day. So, Marco, I'll turn it to you. And I'm sure these comments, I heard everybody at the studio yesterday talking about it. They are alarming comments. They're discouraging comments. And they're just saddening comments that you and I have both talked about. Cal Eldred losing his job on this show. There's a chance he's here next season, because Dayton Moore believes in year five of rebuild, and how long it takes a pitcher to, I guess, make it at this level. The Royals are maybe giving that too much credit. They're thinking it takes 4, 5, 6 years to develop a strong pitcher, when some other teams are developing a pitcher in 1 to 2 years. How can you stand by Dayton Moore's words in this? I want you to play devil's advocate here. How can you hear what Dayton Moore said and be fine with it?
You can't be. You can't be. It's troubling. You kind of hope that what he said was part of the business, where what we've seen with like Tyreek Hill and his comments with Tua, maybe those are words of just confidence to put out there for the pitching coach, because it has been a lot of it's been a long tenure as a coach for Cal, longer than it should have been, especially for somebody serving their first coaching tenure in the major leagues with no minor league prior experience. Personally, to me, I don't really. If it's something that has to do with the talent of this team, I've stopped listening to Dayton Moore. I have. Now, what they were doing out yesterday was excellent, great for the community. I love what he had to say about the kids, the game of baseball, and of course, Lorenzo Cain spoke. He spoke about him as well. I believe it was even the first question asked to him. But I have no doubt that Dayton Moore is an excellent person and does things in good faith, and he's had to take a lot of heat over the years because of some of those decisions. But from now on, when it comes to talking about the play on the field, the talent of the kids, the talent of any player coming through this Royal system, And then the coaches who develop him, the scouts who scout him, who scout the players, I'm done listening. I'm done listening to Dayton Moore because he's no longer the general manager. He is in charge of baseball operations. He is now more so of the business, should be more of the business side, and making sure that when people around Kansas City and across the world see Royals, Kansas City Royals, that they see it and they have a good response to it. That their imaging of the team, of the franchise organization is being accepted by a wider audience for good reasons. But no longer am I going to be listening to him try to talk to us about coaches. No longer am I going to be – I'm done listening to him talk about players because it's gone too long now where when he served as general manager – we've had more worse prospects than great ones or good ones or ones that – where we were promised are going to be excellent. They're going to be able, like Asa Lacy, a guy that he was supposed to be on the major league team the next year. And unfortunately, injuries does hurt. This team has had prospects who have had crappy injuries take over. But that's part of scouting players is the health concerns. Some things can be unpredictable, but some things can be you can see when grading out a player. So, but as of right now, the general manager of this team is JJ Piccolo. We haven't heard more from him about this team than we have from Dayton. And so I'm fine with him sticking around, but as far as making decisions with the staff and the roster and talent, I'm done listening to it. He has nothing to say that makes me think it's worthwhile about any players or coaches going forward because of comments that were made yesterday, because of decisions that are being made by the team right now or decisions that haven't been made, and then what he tells us in the media, it's unbelievable. Not believable, but unbelievable. And I'm just kind of done with it, man. It's worn out on me. I've given up on this team as far as when they let I've given up on this organization when it comes to all that. If Dayton Moore is still going to be if decisions about players and coaches go through him, if draft notes, whatever, if he is making final decisions, I'm done listening. I'm over it.
I wouldn't blame you one bit, and I think a lot of people feel that way, that as long as Dayton Moore is still here, because Dayton Moore has been here since 2006, and it's resulted in 3 winning seasons for the Royals. Now, a World Series title bought a lot of time. For instance, if the Royals lost that wild card game in 2014, and then in 2015 they got back and lost to Houston in the ALDS, Dayton Moore likely wouldn't have stayed around, because the following year after that, the Royals didn't have a winning record. Now, I know certain things can play out differently, but a World Series can buy a small market team a lot of time. It can buy a manager a lot of time. It can buy an owner a lot of time. Now, I know an owner won't be fired, but GM, president of baseball operations, they're all in jeopardy if the team doesn't win a World Series title. Mm-hmm. It happens that way. But for the Royals, I wish they would expect more of themselves, and I think it's what the city wants. Because for the longest time, the Royals have been a doormat of Major League Baseball. A very long time. Now, they won a World Series title, and I know a lot of organizations out there would kill for one. And let alone, they went to back-to-back World Series title. They were 90 feet away from tying and maybe going on to winning a World Series in 2014. They could have won back-to-back World Series titles. Who would have ever thought that for the Kansas City Royals? But that level of expectation should kind of be in the minds of everybody in the front office. Yes, you have rebuilds, but it's about looking at those years and saying, no, we can get there. We don't need to take 5, 6, 7 years of a rebuild. We can go spend money. We can build a competitive bunch. As I've said before, what is stopping the Royals from being the Milwaukee Brewers, the Minnesota Twins? What is stopping them from matching those small market cities? Now, you may say, okay, Minnesota's a little bit bigger, but Milwaukee, where they play, I mean, I'd say it's pretty comparable to Kansas City. They just develop well. They develop pitching. They go out and spend money. They make big trades. They got Christian Yelich trading away prospects. They signed Lorenzo Cain. You know, they developed Brandon Woodruff, Corbin Burns. You know, a while ago, Corey Knebel. They have Josh Hader. They know how to develop a roster and make a winner. And right now, they're 9 games over .500. And they've been competitive for the last couple of years. Do they have a World Series title? No, but year in, year out. There you see the Brewers. The Royals can be that. But in their mind, they believe building a World Series winner because they did accomplish it, and I don't fault them for thinking this, they think it has to be the exact same way every single time. You have to build a World Series winner exactly like they did in 2011, 2012, and 2013. You bring up the young prospects all at once, the tail end of the season, you go through growing pains, you piece together one-year deal of veteran guys that are the tail end of their careers, then 1 year you just go all in. I guess somewhat all in when they went out and traded for James Shields, Wade Davis, made the trade for Greinke years before that. I mean, those are the type of moves I think we could see in the future, but there's no guarantee that you have to go about that process because guess what? Though the Royals won a World Series, they were competitive for 3 years. Their window was incredibly small. They just caught lightning in a bottle and got lucky in that 1 year win or the 2 year, 3 year window. Not saying the team was bad, but I think every team that wins a World Series, they got lucky at one point. That's just the way it is. Even teams like the Yankees, you get lucky. You have to have luck on your side if you win at all. And the Royals caught lightning in a bottle. But what we should expect out of the baseball team here in Kansas City is not to just look at that and say, well, that bought us time. Now we can suck for 10, 15 years, and then we'll get back eventually. No, you can take that and try to leverage it and go, here's where we can springboard. We're back on the map. We're on the map for the first time since the 80s Royals. Maybe the early 90s Royals. I mean, the Royals run the map and then completely tanked back into irrelevancy. They should expect more. Comments like that from Dayton Moore yesterday, that's not expecting more. That's being okay with what's going on. When you can thank the world of your organization, that's showing that you truly care about winning baseball games. And right now, it's really hard to believe that they are 100% caring and knowing what's going on at the current state of this baseball club.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Because we talked about this on the morning show today with Jamie Bluma. And they had talked about same things. Royals development, the pitcher, development, the lack of being able to develop pitchers. Should they just stop drafting pitchers and just take positional players now going forward? And, you know, at the end, because we talk about the championship teams, all that pitching was acquired through free agency and trades.
I don't know necessarily if it's stopped drafting college pitchers. I think for the MLB draft, because it's such a crapshoot, you just draft the best player available. You know, you have that mentality in the NFL draft in like day two or three. That's not position of need. It's just best player. You know, the Chiefs, if the best player on the board was a running back, that would be crazy to say on day two or three. You take the running back, right? It's just you don't need to fill in a starting spot. Now, they got lucky getting Darian Kennard. What was that, the fifth round? Needed somebody on the offensive line. They got in the fifth round, and they damn near a starter in the fifth round. But for the Major League Baseball draft, yeah, you want to have positions of need, but at the end of the day, you draft a high school guy, they're going to be shortstops. College pitchers, yeah, if you want to speed up the process, but their ceiling's a lot lower. I don't say stop drafting college pitchers. I just think they need to go outside the box a little bit. They draft the same type of player over and over and over again. If it's a positional player, it's a guy that can field and it's a guy that can run. If you're the Royals, why not go out and get the guy that's a 40-plus home run hitter with that type of potential, but he's slow and can't field? Why not? The Astros did that with Yordan Alvarez when they traded for Yordan Alvarez. He was a 18, 19-year-old prospect, big dude, raw potential. They traded a bullpen arm and now have one of the best hitters in baseball because you know what the Astros said? Okay, he's not great in the field. He's not very fast, but he can hit it a country mile. The Royals don't do that. The Royals are comfortable with getting the guys that they want. Clubhouse guys that are fast and can field, but don't get on base. They put the ball in play, and they put the ball in play with weak contact. That's what I want from drafting. It doesn't necessarily need to be stop drafting college pitchers, stop drafting this, X, Y, Z. It's go outside the box. Think outside the box and draft guys that you think you can develop. Now, I don't have confidence the Royals could develop a guy with raw power potential but can't field and can't run. because I think they're so comfortable with the fact that they think they can develop guys that can field and run. But they don't make great major league players. Some do. Most don't. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk some College World Series as two games happened last night, and two more will happen later on today. A lot of offense last night, and we'll tell you what happened with that right here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Two College World Series games took place last night. Auburn, 14th in the country, took down and eliminated Stanford 6-2. Stanford did not win a single game in the College World Series. And, man, I thought I said this yesterday on the show. I couldn't erase what happened between Stanford and Arkansas. 17-2 in the first game those two played in the College World Series final, or the College World Series, excuse me. I had no confidence that Stanford could win against an SEC team like Auburn. And though Auburn wasn't the best SEC team, in fact, the best SEC team wasn't even in the College World Series, I didn't feel confident that Stanford could do that. I thought Stanford looked very lackadaisical in Game 1. And in Game 2, their offense still wasn't there. I mean, Stanford did take a 2-0 lead in the first two innings, but coughed up 4 in the 6th, just completely gave it up in the 7th. It was 6-2, gave up 11 hits, 6 runs to Auburn. And after that, it was over. I mean, you go across the board. Brock Jones, who Stanford's best player, was only 1-for-4. The only other player, and the only player in that lineup with multiple hits, was Crampton. He was 3-for-3. Drove in a run. Barrera also drove in the other one for Stanford, but pitching wasn't good enough. Once again, Matthews gave up 6 runs in 3 innings. He gave up all 6 runs that Stanford allowed. Dowd started the game for Stanford, went 4 innings scoreless, only allowed 3 hits, struck out 6, walked 1. But Auburn, once again, too strong for Stanford. And another SEC team that has too much power, too much offensive power, that is, for Stanford. And though they were 47-18 this season, I feel like in the Pac-12, basketball, football, baseball, there's something about the Pac-12 that just doesn't resonate with me. It's been a weaker conference for a long time. Now, I know that there have been good teams that have emerged from the Pac-12, but I always feel like those good teams, their records are skewed a little bit. Not in the way that Gonzaga is in basketball. Like, Gonzaga playing in their conference, they're going to win damn near every single one of them. Maybe they lose one game to San Francisco or St. Mary's. But usually Gonzaga emerges as by far and away the top team of their conference. In fact, they've done it for the last handful of years. In the Pac-12, in football for a long time, it was USC. Then it was Oregon. In basketball, UCLA dominated for years. Then USC of late kind of had a little bit of their run. Oregon was good. Kind of the same teams there. And in baseball, Stanford is usually one of the top dogs that emerges from the Pac-12. But when they make it to the College World Series or they make it into the postseason, they face these SEC teams because we know the SEC has the best baseball conference. They have the best football conference. They have the best baseball conference. They face teams like that. And Auburn was a good team in the SEC. And Ole Miss, a good team in the SEC. But they weren't the top dog. And I think the third, fourth, maybe fifth best team in the SEC can more often than not take down the top team in the Pac-12, which is what Auburn did yesterday. They eliminate Stanford 6-2. Now, in game number two, two SEC opponents, I mean, the College World Series right now is just riddled with the SEC teams. Ole Miss and Arkansas. And Ole Miss, who is yet to lose in the postseason, thumped Arkansas 13-5. And now Arkansas is on the ropes trying to stave off elimination. They'll play later on tonight against those Auburn Tigers who I just mentioned. But the one thing with yesterday's game between Ole Miss and Arkansas, it's seeing when college pitchers can really step up, get on the mound, and sort of shake off those nerves. Ole Miss started a freshman yesterday, a true freshman, I believe it was. And his last name, I want to say, was Elliott. 6 1/3 innings, 1 earned run, struck out 4, walked 2, threw 100 pitches. A true freshman, College World Series game, trying to move to 2-0 in their bracket. Arkansas, on the other hand, started Zach Morris, a sophomore. A sophomore whose ERA was sub-2 going into that. Guess which one didn't make it out of the first inning? It was Zach Morris, who now goes to 6-1 on the season. It was his first loss this year. And what I was amazed with, and I think this can happen because I'm not a Division I college pitcher, I'm sure that when things aren't going your way in the atmosphere, by the way, if you have not watched the College World Series or the Super Regionals for that matter, it's so exciting because everybody's in on every single pitch. It's like the Dominican Winter League when you watch those games, or the WBC, the World Baseball Classic, where fans are just crazy from first inning on. Same thing with the MLB postseason. It's just like that in college baseball. And Zach Morris, who was one good pitch away from getting out of the first inning without allowing a run, would have then likely cruised for a couple more innings. He gives up a two-out RBI single. Roped, by the way. I think it was hit at 105. And it was from, I want to say it was Graham. Yeah, who was 2-for-4, their left fielder. But then command, psyche, whatever you want to say, mentality, all went out the window for Zach Morris. Hit a batter, walked two more, and Dave Van Horn was forced to pull him from the game. Two-thirds of an inning, allowed two earned runs, two hits, walked two, didn't strike out anybody. And then there was blood in the water for Ole Miss, who also were known as the Land Sharks, if you didn't know that. So blood in the water, Arkansas responds with a run in the bottom of the first. Ole Miss gets two more on a Tim Elko home run, a crushed home run to left field, I think traveled 424 feet at 110 miles an hour. In the top of the second, Arkansas responded with two more in the second. So it's 4-3, and you feel like, here we go, it's a slugfest. But after that, it was all Ole Miss. Got two more in the third, four in the fifth, three in the eighth. Arkansas responded for two in the ninth, but it was over at that point. It was 13-3, and Ole Miss went on to win 13-5. Here's my problem now for Arkansas, and they will be in our fact or fiction later on today. To get through this game, and I was texting some of my friends who were all Arkansas fans, I said, if Arkansas loses, this was after the first inning when they pulled Zach Morris. If Arkansas loses this game, their bullpen is going to be completely depleted. And that's all because of the starter. And I hate to put that much fault on a college pitcher or a college athlete for that matter, but it's true. Arkansas used 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pitchers yesterday. The only one to go longer than two innings was Tress, 2 1/3. Walked 3, struck out 3. Jackson Wiggins, an inning and a third, allowed 4 earned runs, walked 3, struck out 3, and allowed 4 hits as well. I mean, every Arkansas pitcher, aside from Trest and Ledbetter, allowed runs. It was ugly. And now Arkansas is forced to have the uphill battle. You always want to win the first two in the College World Series. That's obvious. But it buys you some time. It gives you some cushion. So that if you win one more, you're in the final, and you have two games to give. You can lose one and still win the College World Series. Now Arkansas can't afford another loss. So as for later on today, another 1 p.m. first pitch. This will be between Texas A&M and Notre Dame. Elimination game. Both games are elimination games today. So first pitch between A&M and Notre Dame will be at 1 p.m. Arkansas and Auburn will have a first pitch of 6 p.m. on ESPN2. Notre Dame and A&M will be on ESPN. Notre Dame will be the home team in Game 1. Auburn, the home team in Game 2. We're going to take our final break of the show. When we come back, we'll have some NFL headlines right here on The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Some NFL headlines for you, at least two headlines that really stuck out to me of yesterday. So, Ndamukong Suh was on TV yesterday, guest analyst on ESPN2's NFL Live on Monday. He mentioned that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are likely out of the picture at this point. He said, quote, "I'm excited to really just understand where I can potentially be," Suh said. "It looks like the Bucs are out of the picture, but I'm excited to explore other options." Then he quote tweeted NFL Live's tweet of that and said, "The Raiders would be fun." And how fitting would that be? And Ndamukong Suh going to the Las Vegas Raiders, who don't need much more help on their defensive line, and who knows how much Ndamukong Suh still has in the tank. I'd be lying, though, if I'd said, why not the Chiefs kick the tires on Ndamukong Suh? More depth on the interior. You know, right now your front four are set, Frank Clark on the outside, George Karloftis opposite of him, Chris Jones and Derek Nnadi on the inside. You have Taylor Stallworth as depth. You have Colin Saunders as depth, Mike Dana as depth, and also Josh Kando as depth as your, I guess, eight guys up front. The Chiefs, though, haven't made too many big splashes in terms of their defensive line and free agency. Now, here's where I'm a little bit critical of it. I think bringing in Ndamukong Suh this late in the offseason, I don't think it's super late, but later than it could have been, it may be counterproductive. You know, I truly don't know if Ndamukong Suh can be a guy that you can count on for 17 games this year and be a valuable depth piece. And if he goes somewhere else, I'm not really going to bat an eye. He goes to the Raiders, so be it. The only guy I'm really concerned about on their defensive line is Max Crosby, because he's elite. He was one of the best edge rushers last season. He's the one guy I truly fear, because, yeah, you can pick a couple of guys, right? But if I'm going to pick one guy by far and away who I fear on Vegas' line, it's Max Crosby. And if Ndamukong Suh goes to the Raiders, so be it, on the interior. The Chiefs have a strong interior offensive line. But I'd be lying if I said I'd be okay with the addition. I just think it'd be sort of one of those additions like a Josh Gordon type of deal. Now, you feel good about it early on until you get on the field and you realize maybe he's not really what he used to be. So Ndamukong Suh, likely not returning to Tampa Bay, does believe the Raiders could be a fun landing spot for him to play football this upcoming season. As for the second headline, Marco, I'm curious of your thoughts on this one, because I like it when wide receivers have this type of confidence in themselves. But we all know Chase Claypool. Chase Claypool was TikTok buddies with Juju when he was still in Pittsburgh. But Chase Claypool out of Notre Dame, big target, I think wildly athletic and wildly underrated. But Chase Claypool believes he's a top three receiver in the NFL. Buy it or don't buy it?
Don't buy it. How can you? No way.
Do you buy the confidence? Are you okay with a wide receiver having that confidence in himself, or is that just kind of putting a target on your back?
Absolutely, but yeah, be careful with what you say, because you never know what's going to come back around to it. You know what? Someone's got to stand out on that wide receiver room for Pittsburgh. I think Deontay Johnson's a little bit of a better option on the team, but hey, man, you got it. Whatever can get you motivated for the season.
Somebody did have a funny tweet and said, well, Claypool is right. He's a top three receiver on Pittsburgh because he is behind a couple of guys,
there
at least
go.
You can believe. I do think, though, that Chase Claypool was just not in Pittsburgh. He could thrive elsewhere with a pretty strong quarterback. Like, let's say you put him in Arizona and D-Hop's not there. I think Claypool could put up a couple of 1,000-yard seasons. He's just going from catching passes from Ben Roethlisberger to Mitch Trubisky. That's Pittsburgh right now is struggling to find their quarterback. And yes, they went out and drafted Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett was on the lowest part of the totem pole for me in terms of talented quarterbacks in that draft. And there was not a deep class. But I do not think Kenny Pickett is going to solve the problems for Pittsburgh. I like the confidence. I think every wide receiver should have that confidence that they're a top three wide receiver. Like, if Mecole Hardman came out tomorrow and was like, I believe I'm a top five wide receiver in the NFL. I feel like I'm better than Tyreek Hill. I wouldn't believe it statistically, but I'd like the confidence. You want to have your wide receivers saying stuff like that. I mean, being humble is fine, but believing in yourself is another thing. And I think you have to have that chip on your shoulder in the NFL if you are going to succeed. All right, we're going to take not a quick break. We're going to switch directions here, because if we take another break, it's the end of the show. We're going to switch our direction here and play some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes, under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, Cal Eldridge is the pitching coach for the Royals in 2023.
Oh, man. I'm going to go fiction on this. If he is, I'm really starting to, I guess, question the direction of the Royals. I think they are going to make a change. They're just waiting to the offseason because they don't want to change up their coaching staff a ton in the middle of the season when it's really not going to do much anyway. You bring in the next pitching coach for the Royals, not sure how much it's going to help this pitching staff. So I'll go fiction, not next year, but here's an interesting tidbit. This was tweeted out a little bit ago that GM J.J. Piccolo on Dayton Moore's quotes that went viral yesterday, at least in the Kansas City media. J.J. said that quote that went out was taken out of context completely. He was asked about Cal Eldred's attitude during this time, So that's the first thing that needs to be cleared up. I feel better. He's happy about Cal Eldred's attitude, not the production with his pitching staff. So I can get behind that a little bit. If that's going to be cleared up, good thing J.J. Piccolo did that, because I do not think Cal Eldred will be the pitching coach much longer, let alone in 2023. I'll go fiction on that.
Fact or fiction, Arkansas is eliminated tonight.
Their pitching staff is so depleted. They have to have somebody, even for the rest of the College World Series, the rest of the week. If they win tonight and eliminate Auburn, they're still going to be depleted with their pitching staff. Last night was bad for them. That was about the worst possible way you could lose yesterday. Long game. Nobody really could throw strikes. Nobody could miss bats. So I'm going to go fact. I think Arkansas will be eliminated tonight against the Auburn Tigers.
Fact or fiction, the Avalanche and Lightning go into seven games.
Fun series. I think the Avalanche lost their first road game in the playoffs last night, 6-2 to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is just so seasoned. They're like the Golden State Warriors of the NHL, at least of late. I would love to see this game go into, or this series go into seven. Right now, the Avalanche lead 2-1. Tampa Bay is going to make a run here, and I would not be shocked if they won maybe the next two, make it 3-2. But I think the Avalanche could force a game seven. I'm going to go fact because I love the Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't watch hockey in the regular season, but you can't miss the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm going to go fact. I think both the Avs and the Lightning are going to go into seven games in the Stanley Cup Finals.
And lastly, Ochai Agbaji and Christian Brown will go into the first round of the NBA draft on Thursday.
So I believe in the latest mock draft, Ochai Agbaji is supposed to go 14th overall to the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's been the team that he's been mocked to the most. And I think he'd be a great fit in Cleveland. And I think Ochai mentioned that he grew up watching Cleveland. He always dreamed of maybe playing in Cleveland. It'd be fun for him. I mean, I think most kids our age grew up watching a lot of Cleveland Cavaliers basketball because, hello, LeBron James is on the Cleveland Cavaliers twice. I mean, maybe you grew up watching the Miami Heat. It was because of LeBron. Maybe you watched the Lakers. It's because of LeBron. Christian Brown, however, has sort of fallen from that spot of Golden State going late first round to the first pick of the second round, which would be the Orlando Magic, who also have the number one overall pick on Thursday night. They're supposed to go out and take Jabari Smith out of Auburn. I think it'd be fun for Christian Brown to go to Orlando, though, too. I think it's a good fit as well. A lot of young guys down there in Orlando. It's a team that hasn't really been relevant since Dwight Howard left. But I think they're building something there in Orlando. They're going to have the chance to build it even more. They can take guys like Jabari Smith and Christian Brown. But the question is, do they both go first round? I'll go fact Ochai does. I think Christian Brown does go to the Magic at the first pick in the second round, but I would not be shocked if he slipped into that last pick of the first round. It's going to be right on the borderline for Christian Brown, but both guys will be drafted, which is the best possible news for both of those guys. Well, there's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.